Hello and welcome to the Modern Fairy Sightings podcast, where we listen to people's fairy encounters. But take heed, we're not talking about winged Tinkerbells here. These are real fairies, real encounters that took people like you and I by surprise. Stay a while and hear their stories. My name is Jo Hickey Hall, and I'm a folklore researcher. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Modern Fairy Sightings podcast. I'm Jo Hickey Hall, and I am absolutely delighted to welcome my friend and fellow folklorist, Dr. Neil Rushton. How are you doing, Neil?
Hello, Jo. I'm absolutely delighted to be here with you.
Yes, with the gleaming goblet. Yeah. I see your raised chalice, and I join you with my owl mug that I found recently. It's one of my Chazza shop finds that I'm quite chuffed with.
Well, it's pretty good, but I'm afraid you don't beat a 17th century silver goblet. I win.
That is quite spectacular. Could you give us a better look at that, please? Because we could only sort of see part of it. If you move it back, oh yeah. Goblet action there. Wow. That's quite good, actually. So it's got a nice steady base. You're not going to knock that over in a...
Well, in theory, it could happen, and it will happen one day. Let's hope it's not today.
Lovely stuff. So, yeah, it's good to see you. And we've got some things to talk about tonight because, well, the last time we saw each other in person was in October 2023 when we joined with Kate Ray. And Rob Wildwood was there as well at the time. And in Glastonbury, this was for the fairy fair. So that night, Kate and I went off to the ball, and you chose to climb Glastonbury Tor. So it would be really great to hear about your experience up there, because I've had a number of people contact me about experiences up the Tor. There seems to be a bit of a flurry of experiences coming in. So yeah, I'd love to hear about your experience tonight.
Yes, it was, yes, as you say, it was October, sort of the end, 20th, was it? Maybe 20th of October?
21st, I think.
21st. And I should say initially, I know Glastonbury very well. I actually lived there for a year in 2012, 2013, and I've been there, well, hundreds of times since the late 80s, actually. And on this particular occasion, as you say, when you and Kate went off to the ball, which I refused to go to because I don't like dressing up, really.
We did try.
Yeah, you did try, but I stood firm. And I instead decided to go up the Tor. And this was, so it's a Saturday night and it's about 10 o'clock. You know, good, decent weather for October, wasn't wet at all. And so off I went up the Tor. Now, I've been up the Tor, I don't know, hundreds of times in my life. And this was the first time I'd ever been up there alone. And anyone who knows the Tor will know that, especially on a Saturday evening, relatively early, you know, 10 o'clock, there's usually a few people milling around up there. Yeah. And on special occasions, there can be hundreds of people up there. And so this was strange. All of the way up, I walked up the sort of long path up to the top, and I didn't pass anyone. No one was there. And then when I got to the top, I was on my own. And that put me in a bit of a strange frame of mind, maybe, because I was thinking, this is so unusual. And you just kind of think, well, okay, that's what's happened. There's no one up here. I'll sit down on the, looking out to the west. That's my favorite thing to do. Look out with the Mendips to the north, looking out towards the Bristol Channel. It's always a fantastic view out there, leaning against the tower, which is, you know, the ruins of the church tower on top of Glastonbury Tor. And I was alone for 20 minutes or so. And then I heard voices, which sounded like two males and a female. Nothing so unusual in that. They seemed to be coming up from the other path that I came from. And they got closer to the tower. I can't see them. They're on the other side of the tower and seemed to go through the tower. Always talking in quite a kind of fast narrative and in a foreign language and a language that I could not understand. So if it had been French or Spanish or German or Italian, I'd have picked up a few words and, well, you know, that's what nationality they are. Mm-hmm. But this was a language that I couldn't understand at all. Which, well, you know, so what? That's the way of it. But then I thought, well, I better get up and move around the tower so that they see I'm up here, so they don't get a shock when they come round and find me sort of loitering on one side of the tower. So I did, and I got up expecting to see three people at either inside the tower still or just outside the tower, and there was no one there. And I looked all around the tower. For those who don't know, the top of the tower is about, I don't know, about 20 feet by 30 feet, something like that, maybe a bit more, with the tower in the middle. And I looked down the two pathways to the top. I looked to see, I did 5 minutes reconnaissance to find out where these people could possibly have gone to that I heard so clearly only maybe 5 feet away from me. Inside the, moving through the tower. And so, as is my way, I immediately start to rationalize this. Is it the voices drifting up from beneath the tour? No, that wasn't quite right. They were too close. They were definitely within a few feet of me. What else could it be? Could it be somebody who three people who did come up and they were hiding? It seems pretty unlikely. And I did stay up for another 15 or so minutes and there was still no sign of anybody. And why would anyone do that? All the rationalization failed. And instead, I was left with this, well, I don't know what you'd call it. It's a little bit of a mystery. I did write it up on my blog site.
Yes.
And suggesting that it could have been fairy type entities. But that's just a guess. It could be anything. But it was certainly, to my mind, something esoteric, Fortean, paranormal, whatever you want to call it. It was a very odd experience. And in a moment, I'll talk about a previous experience, which is very, very similar, which came to me. Actually, I only realized about an hour after this had happened that, oh, this has happened before.
Yeah.
So that's the experience. That was on Glastonbury tour. And I have, when I wrote this up for the blog article, I did do some research to find out whether anything very similar is prevalent in either the folklore or modern Fortiana. And, you know, there's not much that matches it that closely. There's lots of, you know, electronic voice phenomenon in, you know, ghost hunting, that sort of thing. Yeah. That's not what was happening here, or didn't seem to be what was happening here. This is a very specific kind of event, kind of encounter, experience, whatever you want to call it. And I haven't been able to find anything that matches it so exactly. And I even asked in the blog article that I wrote, I asked at the end, could anyone come, you know, if you've got any encounters that are very similar to this, could you let me know? And a few people did write about voice encounters that they've had, audio encounters, but none of them were really match this. So there you go. It's a bit of a mystery. I'll talk about the other one in a moment, but what do you think?
Welcome to the Alchemy of Natural Healing. I'm your host, Laurel Dewey. True healing is an alchemical process, meaning it must transform you on all levels, body, mind, and spirit. What affects one affects all three. True healing is one of the hardest journeys you'll ever travel, but it's one of the most rewarding and fulfilling when you get to meet yourself for the first time. If you're ready to take that journey, let's get started.
Well, do you know, hearing you talk about it again, because obviously we met the following morning, didn't we? And you told me all about this encounter. And it is incredibly interesting. And I think particularly as you pinpointed the fact that you've gone up there and you have been the only one there. Did you sense when you were going up, did you kind of sense any strangeness even before you heard the voices? Was there any kind of shift? Because I do think that that is very unusual. It's a Saturday night. You've got a huge event going on in Glastonbury. You've got all the people that were there in the daytime for the fair. You've got, you know, obviously there's the ball going on that night, but not everybody goes to that. And you've got a general kind of sense of a bit of a party atmosphere going on in the town. It's not a stretch to imagine that the people that are there staying in Glastonbury, maybe for the first time visiting or whatever, would go for a walk up the Tor like yourself. So, did you sense anything in the air that evening?
It would be disingenuous of me to say yes, really. The only change in my state of consciousness would be a slight depression, because we'd met up in the pub beforehand in the Georgia Pilgrim, me, you, Kate, and Rob, Rob Wildwood. And, you know, you were all excited. You were off to the ball. Rob was, I don't know what Rob was up to, but he was off. And it was a kind of happy meeting. And everyone was in a very positive state of mind. And then you all went, and I was on my own. And I'm thinking, that's pretty typical for me, you know, sort of. I'm not saying you three dumped me. I don't mean that. What I mean is that once with friends and colleagues, and there was a very positive ambience about us meeting up. And then the next moment, boom, I'm on my own. And I'm not going to the ball. And I've got to do my own thing. So I went up the Tor. And, you know, I love going up the Tor. It's always, every time you go up there, there's something different happening. But this time I was trudging up the Tor. It was like, oh, here I go. I'm on my own again. Everyone else is away doing something exciting, and I'm trudging up here. And that was sort of accentuated by the fact that there's no one else around. So that is the only thing I could say that may have altered my state of consciousness that allowed me to have some type of esoteric experience.
Possibly. So the other thing that really strikes me is that, you know, it's the 21st of October. We're on the cusp of Samhain. And I mean, I've been reading this fantastic book, and I'm sure you've read it too. Danu Forrest's book.
Yes.
Gwyn Ap Nudd.
Yeah.
You know, Gwyn, King of the Fairies, is said to be Lord of the Underworld. And there are medieval tales placing him, and a hell of a lot of folklore placing him at Glastonbury Tor and other hills actually about the place, I think in the Welsh mountains. But he is being Lord of the Underworld. It's at that point of the year when we all go into the underworld, and so you're there around that time. Now, the flip side to that, another character or two other characters that come up are, now I'm not going to pronounce this correctly, I'm afraid, Gwythyr ap Gwydol, who is his kind of nemesis, and he is Victor, son of Scorcher. So whereas Gwyn ap Nyath is the Dark Lord and Lord of the Underworld, Gwythyr is the Lord of, you know, the sun, the material, so the kind of the sun plane, as in this plane, or summertime. You could look at it as kind of dark, the dark months or the dark half of the year, as opposed to the summer, the lighter half of the year, where you could see it as, you know, light versus dark. You could see it as the upper world or the world, as opposed to the underworld. But they have this ongoing tussle over, and I'm probably going to pronounce this wrong as well, Cridilad, and I'm sure I really am pronouncing that wrong, who is the woman that is meant to be queen, Gwyn's queen, Gwyn ap Nyth's queen, but she goes off and marries, or she's about to marry Gwythyr, and Gwyn kind of takes her away with him. So the idea of it is as if she is kind of the spirit of the world or nature, and Gwyn takes her away to be with him for some of the year, but they keep having this ongoing battle over Cridilad. But that is interesting because that's two males and a female. So you've got, right? So you've got up there
and the language, if they'd have been speaking Welsh, I certainly wouldn't have understood a word.
That's interesting. Yeah. And the fact that they're speaking quite fast reminds me of some people that I've spoken to where they've come face to face with an otherworldly being, and they tend to talk in a very, it's as if it's a human voice speeded up, and it's chattering, yes. Very high-pitched chattering, which this doesn't sound like, to be honest, but you mentioned that they were talking quite fast in a language that you couldn't understand. But that placing of those three figures around that time, just before there's going to be this tussle of, you know, Gwyn going into the underworld and these three beings up there, and the fact that you're alone, and I find that quite interesting. It is intriguing.
I certainly hadn't thought until you've been talking about it. I knew about Gwyn ap Nyth and the St. Collins story, obviously, and Danu's book, but I hadn't quite picked up on that. You know, two. It was definitely two males and a female that were talking up there, and that's. I mean, that may be stretching incredulity, but
exactly. But it's
very interesting. It is very interesting. Do you want me to? Shall I quickly tell you about the previous experience?
Yes, please do.
Because
yeah.
you talking about it being on the cusp of Samhain.
Mm.
The previous experience, and I've just realised this moment was on the cusp of Beltane.
Ooh.
It was a few days before Beltane, but long ago, in 1994. Just showing my age here.
Good old days.
The great old days. My goodness. If only it was 1994 again. Oh, eh?
Yeah.
And
solved a lot of things.
Yeah, it would. Yeah, indeed. So I was wild camping for 3 days in Dorset, and this was the last night I was spending, and I walked along the coast. So this is the end of April, just before Beltane.
Yeah.
And I picked a place, I'd already picked it on the map, a place called Langdon Wood.
Right.
Which is near Golden Cap. It's a sort of famous landmark on the coast. And Langdon Wood is just inland from Golden Cap. And it's a decent sized wood. I knew I'd be able to camp down there and not be disturbed, as is the way when you're wild camping. So set my tent up, dusk, have something to eat, read, and then go to sleep. I'm quite a light sleeper in a tent, especially when I'm wild camping. Yeah. And so I just kept on waking up, and I woke up for the third or fourth time at exactly 3 o'clock in the morning. And this isn't my memory recording this. I did keep a journal at the time. Yeah. So I picked this up from the journal when I wrote about it recently. And so I woke up 3 o'clock in the morning And I don't know whether this had woken me up or it happened just coincidentally just after I woke up. But I heard the voices of two women. And remember, I'm in a wood at 3 o'clock, not near any paths, in a tent, not lit at all. And I hear two women coming quite quickly towards me. And I can assure you I wasn't dreaming. I wasn't asleep and dreaming. I was very, very wide awake. And after this happened, I stayed awake till dawn. I took the tent up and went. But the two women were coming towards me pretty quickly. And once again, they were talking fast to each other in a language that I just didn't understand at all. It was a completely foreign language, no language that I understood. And they came. Remember, I'm in the tent. I'm not seeing this. This is just the sound. They came very close to the tent. Didn't slow down at all. And carried on. And carried on talking all the way until they drifted off and there was no more sound.
Mm-hmm.
And so as soon as the sound disappeared, I got out of the tent, had a look around for what it was worth because it was still dark. And then got back into the tent and had a good long think about it because, and like the Glastonbury experience, there was no fear.
No
fear at all. I mean, you know, that could have been quite a creepy thing to happen in a wood, in the middle of the night. But at the time, just like Glastonbury, all I was thinking was, oh, this is interesting. This is absolutely fascinating. And it was only, let me just check the name of the lady who wrote about Langton Wood. There you go. Louise Hodgson, Secret Places of West Dorset.
Yeah.
And she wrote about the tradition of a witch's coven operating in Langton Wood. It's supposedly, certainly in 1994, would have still been operating. Right. So there's a possible explanation. Some kind of ritual was happening in the woods, but that doesn't quite, witches may have been speaking a special language to each other, as we know from some of the folklore. But it doesn't quite ring true, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning, two women talking to each other. They didn't even stop. They must have, how were they seeing in the dark? And if they were seeing in the dark, why didn't they see the tent? It doesn't quite explain it, does it?
Mm.
And Hodgson also in that book says that in Langdon Wood, there's a tradition from first you could find it was from the 19th century of whistling down of the fairies. Don't know whether you've come across that before. I hadn't before I'd read it in there, but you will whistle in a special place in Langdon Wood and the fairies will whistle back at you.
Amazing.
So really interesting. So those two incidents are, they're not exactly the same, but they're very similar, aren't they?
Yeah.
In terms of that audio threshold experience. This is the other thing. It's both times. Looking back at it, especially now, I'm thinking, was I on the edge of something?
Mm-hmm.
Was that just an audio and it could have become visual and it could have become interactive because there was no interaction between these voices. It was just the voices, me hearing them. Mm-hmm. Was I on a threshold just about to go there and for whatever reason it didn't happen? I don't know. I don't have the explanation for it, but both of them were extremely interesting experiences in, almost 30 years apart.
Yeah. For the one down, and thank you for sharing that. That is, I had not heard of the whistling. Funny enough, I read over your piece again earlier about the two encounters, which you've got your blog is on WordPress. It's Dead But Dreaming on Word. Is it deadbutdreaming.com?
Yes.
On WordPress, yeah. And when you were in the tent and you felt, or you heard, these women approach talking, What can you remember what the initial sense was? Was it, did you feel drawn to go and investigate, or did you feel, you know, what, if you could kind of name what that reaction was, the emotional kind of reaction?
Well, do remember that this is 30 years ago. So, you know, drawing on memories from 30 years ago can be very, very misleading. But I, as I said, I do keep a journal for all my wild camping exploits in my youth. And in the journal, I'm going to paraphrase this. I can't remember exactly what I said, but it's something along the lines of, this is so interesting. This is fascinating. This is absolutely fascinating. But I had no, I'm going to jump out the tent and see what this is. I just cannot remember. But the journal article is very explicit in saying, this is so interesting.
Yeah.
And what I have of my memory of that, as well as the Glastonbury incident, is, yeah, this is fascinating. I just, you know, what's going on? You know, is something else going to happen? But of course, nothing else did happen. That was the experience. It started and ended like that. Yeah.
And I mean, it is on the edge of something. You know, it's happened at just before Beltane. It's happening just before Samhain. And are you being pulled or alerted to, you know, this other world? And I think, you know, this with the whole idea of Gwynapneath ruling the underworld like this, I just wonder how that fits with, you know, your experience of these dark months that we're only just coming out of now. And whether you think that you were on the precipice of something that you've now kind of made your way through, or have been making your way through, does that kind of make things any clearer?
Yeah, possibly. That, I mean, you know, obviously, Samhain comes as we artificially make the nights longer by, you know, putting the clocks back at around about that time, but even it's the natural progression, you know, it's the end of the Celtic year, end and start of the, you know, the changeover in the Celtic year. Our ancestors obviously recognized it as a special time and not necessarily a good time, because things are going to get dark, they're going to get cold. And certainly for many previous societies, there was a good chance that they were, that starved to death over winter if things went really pear-shaped. For me, this winter, as I've talked to you about before, has been not great. It's been the weather has been dark, it's been wet, and there is almost like a pall over the situation globally. You know, the geopolitical situation in the world, the all kinds of cultural, social issues, which seem to have come to the fore since maybe October of last year. And they've made me incredibly gloomy, and looking back on it, that incident in Glastonbury was probably the start of it, because since then, in the end of October, I actually haven't been anywhere. I haven't travelled anywhere outside of where I live.
Yeah,
and that was partly a purposeful decision, thinking that a hibernation for the winter, you know, a reintegration, I can get some writing done, I can just sort of concentrate on what I need to do without thinking about traveling around the country or whatever. And I thought that would be a good idea, and it's kind of backfired on me. And I've spent the last few months in quite a depressive situation. And it was actually, again, it was only when you and I talked, you know, before we were recording, about that time scale that I realized, yeah, no, that's when it happened. It was from that incident on Glastonbury tour, or at least the weekend that surrounded that incident, that things started to get dark and not so great. And you know, whether I can blame Gwyn Ap Nudd for it is another matter. But what he represents symbolically and allegorically, yeah, that's that. And the fact that happened at Glastonbury and his associations with Glastonbury, boom, there's the point where I took a downturn through the winter. Just quickly, two other things that have contributed to that sort of winter blackness. As you know, Kate Ray and I do a podcast, Hair in the Hawthorn, which is Kate's wonderful broadcast.
Yeah, and excellent podcast.
But again, around this about the same time, shortly after we were in Glastonbury, she moved house and she didn't have any internet for months.
Yeah.
So we didn't do any podcasts. And I realized after a few months of this, I really miss this. This was great for me. God, that sounds dreadful, doesn't it? It was great for me.
It's community. It's everything. The moment is everything with people.
Exactly. And, you know, the powers that be would, the nefarious powers that be would like us isolated from one another so that we could be much easier controlled. If you have a good community, even if that community is two or three people, and I suddenly felt as though, oh my goodness, I realized that, you know, I'm not doing these podcasts, and it's I'm alone. not because I live alone, and I've probably underestimated the importance of contacting with people like Kate and yourself and others. And so that was one aspect of it. And the other aspect is, as you know, I have something, and I think we've talked about this before on this very podcast, I think my Charles Bonnet syndrome.
Yes.
Because of my, I have a visual impairment. And for years now, basically quite regularly, I have seen fairy type entities in my house at certain times of the day in the evening. I won't go into detail on that because we've talked about it before, and you can find the information on my blog site. But since January, it hasn't happened. And that's very disappointing to me, because although a lot of people with Charles Bonnet syndrome are terrified of it and want it to go away, I enjoy the experience. Yeah. I find it very affirming and an incredible experience to have. I feel very privileged to have had it for so many years. But the last time it happened was in the first week of January. And that's the longest since I got my visual impairment that it's been absent. And that, again, you know, whatever these fairy type entities were or were not, I felt some affinity with them. Yes. Even though there was never any direct dialogue, it was always just visual. Sometimes they spoke, but there was no, we weren't chatting with each other. But they were there, and them not being here since the beginning of January has felt like another desertion. And it's like, why doesn't this happen anymore? What's going on? That's an extremely long-winded way of answering your original question of, you know, pinning Gwyn Ap Nudd and the Glastonbury experience I had with what's gone on in the month since, five months since. And as I said to you before, I'm hoping that spring will come soon and light will overcome the darkness.
Absolutely. And I do, you know, for you as well. Thankfully, Kate is back online now. And it's worth saying that there's something that's happening around this Gwyn Ap Nudd that involves technical meddling of sorts, let's say. Because perhaps I'll get onto that in a minute, but I will flag that because it's something I want to come back to. But also, you know, he represents, you know, if it's the, you know, the underworld, it does relate to, you know, death and depression and darkness and the sense of being alone. You know, these are all aspects of the dark. And it feels from, it sounds like you have been kind of living through that in a sense. So I feel like it would be really good for you to do something quite significant for Beltane, you know, to come back, to make a point of coming back up from the underworld. I know of, there's a woman called Jane Meredith, and she wrote a book called, I think it's Journey to the Underworld or something like that. She's written a few books now, and I have done some training with her in the past many years ago. And I remember her telling me that sometimes in parts of our lives, we can, you know, if we think of the story of Persephone, for instance, we can, you know, venture down into the underworld or get lured into the underworld in some way, you know, by Hades, another god of the underworld. And it can be really hard to get back up from there. It can be really, really hard to get back up from there. And even if there's like a chink of light, and that light might be, it's usually something creative. So whether it is that you write or you sing, that's really important to keep that sense of connection. But definitely the community aspect is overwhelmingly the most important thing through those dark months, which is, you know, we would sit and we would gather and we would tell stories and we would have the fire, you know, the light. And that was very important. And as you say, you know, we are separated through, we, you know, we join online in our like-minded communities, but we don't often live near each other. And that's when the kind of technology is really important. So people have talked about, you know, potential outages. Technical outages. So I do hope that doesn't happen, because for a lot of us, it's our lifeline, basically, to be able to speak to each other. And it just does show how important communities are. So I'm really sorry to hear that, Neil, that, you know, you've been feeling this. And I know you're not the only one, because it is very difficult to cope with what's going on in the world right now. It's just, it's hard to function, isn't it, when we're witnessing what we're witnessing. And I think it's interesting that you had this experience happen in October, and around perhaps in, I think it might have been in November or December, I spoke to a woman. We were kind of writing to each other about an experience that she had at Glastonbury Tour, where she saw this tall, dark man running from the bottom of the tour up it, but in a very kind of otherworldly way. He didn't seem human because of the way that he could traverse huge bramble bushes, and she said he was just moving through them at speed. It would be impossible for somebody to do that, she felt. So I'm going to be speaking to her. And there was another woman that I just, in the latest episode I released, episode 78, and that's called Dark Rider on Glastonbury Tour. And she was visiting in 2008. I think it was 2008. And while she had kind of made a bit of a pilgrimage up the tour, and I won't go too much into it because people can go and find the episode, but she encountered this guy dressed all in black leathers, like a motorcyclist looking guy, with a black visor, black motorcycle helmet with the visor pulled down. And the reason she got into contact with me was because she had heard the same figure turn up in previous episode Encounter on the Thames, where this same guy, this dark rider, appears and disappears, which is what happened on the tour. This guy appears and disappears on the tour. And he turned up in another episode, the one about a child witnessing a green gnome climbing through his bedroom window, which I think was episode 76. So these are all really recent episodes that there's a sense of something building up. This dark man, this dark figure, interestingly, through a completely different project to do with dreams, I've been in touch with Jessica, who spoke to Dara Mason on the Spirit Box podcast. Now, when we came back on the coach that day after you'd been up the tour and had that experience, I was telling you about the episode, wasn't I? That she'd...
Yes.
Yeah, she was there with her friend, and people can go and check that episode out. She encountered this dark man at the top of the tour. You know, having processed that whole experience, she'd like to talk about it again. So she's going to come talk to me about it. So there's, you know, something going on there. And on the technical side of things, what's interesting is we've just had a bit of a nightmare with our technical setup tonight. Okay. It was me. various things happening. And I noticed when I was doing the interview with the woman in the last episode, the Dark Rider, she cut out about 6 or 7 times, very unusually. And there was a couple of EVPs on that episode, which I've left in. So this kind of technical side of it too.
Well, yeah. I mean, Kate and I often joke almost every podcast we do, there's a problem. There's some weird little technical glitch. Usually you can get over it, but it usually happens when we've got guests on. If it's just me and Kate, it seems to be okay. But as soon as a guest comes on, it's like some weird little glitches in the podcast. And of course, the joke is it's the fairies, because they're not too keen about, you know, they're a bit suspicious about what we're going to be talking about. We don't want giving away some of their secrets. And I always remember, you know, when I've done interviews with Anthony Peake, you know, the writer, Anthony Peake.
Yeah.
His
Consciousness Hours.
That's right. Yep. You know, great guy, brilliant writer, you know, really sort of hardcore writer on all this subject matter. And he says, and sure enough, the two interviews that I've done with him and when he was on the podcast with Kate and I, all sorts of problems. And he said it happens absolutely every time. In fact, he's had to stop doing the Consciousness Hour because he just got so peeved with it. He says, I'm not doing this. And it's ridiculous. Every time something goes wrong and I've had enough, I'm going to have a break for a year. And he pins it on the archons.
Yeah.
From the Gnostic Gospels. Because, you know, that's his thing. But, you know, are the archons the same as the fairies? I think they probably were. They're probably all from the same place. So there's my explanation for all these technological glitches. I'm sure Gwynapnith he's part of that. He probably knew we were going to be talking about him tonight and thought, well, I'll put a stop to this.
Well, this is it. I mean, with the woman that I was speaking to in that last episode, it was every time she went to talk about him, where I'd asked her a question about something, and then she'd just about to start, and then it just cut out. It's just, we got the message, but I didn't feel any sense of malevolence. I have to say that.
No, it's more trickery, isn't it? It's more kind of let's just play a trick on them.
Yeah, and maybe making their presence known as well. I mean, I don't know about you, but I feel, with all of this going on, we had a bit of a chat about this before, didn't we? I feel very hopeful with what's happening. I feel, despite the devastation and the immense amount of suffering and just the horror of what we're witnessing, I feel like the flip side of that that cannot be, you know, removed or destroyed is the love between people. You know, there's people gathering together and in love and showing their solidarity with those in suffering, There are people reaching out to those that are in that situation and offering, you know, friendship, companionship, aid, support. There's just this immense amount of love in the world. And I think that it's surely waking people up, those that couldn't see what goes on. If they had not figured it out yet, for goodness sake, will they see it now? Yeah. Because it's glaring them in the face. And, you know, I said to you before as well, there's that really interesting interview with James Tunney. I think it's James Tunney on Jeffrey Mishlove's New Thinking Aloud, that thankfully one of our patron members, Arthur, who suggests some fantastic podcasts, he had put me onto to that one. It was quite a recent one, talking about the Marian visions at Garabandal. And interestingly, what really struck me was that the girls, who of course were a lot older now, and I think only a couple of them are still alive, in fact, but what the girls were saying was that they had been told that towards the end of the world, it, as we know it, it's not the end of the world. We're pushing through, I firmly believe, to a new world. That's firmly what I believe. But we would be faced with, you know, our own death as a global society, because we're going to get that close that we suffer this ego death. And it has to be, because there are because ego definitely still rules the world as we see it. It's not what's rising up. What's rising up is love. And that is from a great deal of people in the world that are that way already. But the world is ruled by ego for sure. It's the most egotistical or ego, the nations with the largest egos that are running the show.
Yes.
And what she was saying was that towards the end, when we come that close and we think that this is going to be the end, that's what will shift the remaining of us to make that shift into the new, that we basically yep. get a second chance is what she was told, what the girls were told, that we will get this second chance. And so, you know, with the risk of what's happening, people's fingers near the nuclear buttons, etc., and the risk of what potentially can be happening in the world, I do feel hopeful. I feel that the light will overcome. I don't know what you feel about that.
Yes. Well, you know, I'm not Christian, but I do like the Book of Revelation. And as with everything in the Bible, if you can take the symbolism from it and work with it, it's very useful. And it's just what you were saying there, I'm thinking, you know, the verse from Revelation, then I saw a new heaven and a new earth. The first heaven and the first earth had passed away. Oh. And it's going to be painful. It's what you're talking about, that rising up of love, that's all very well, but there's also a lot of opposite of love, whether you want to think of that as hate or evil.
Fear as well.
And it's not going to just disappear without a whimper.
Oh, we are seeing that, aren't we? It's not going quietly.
Who knows the timescale that love can overcome that. And you know, you're just gonna have to accept there's going to be some suffering. Mm-hmm. and that's that, but your hope is justified, I think, in that there does seem to be an upsurge of people who are still in the minority, I would say, but who are questioning more and more the control systems that we have in place. And that I'm not just talking politically, I'm talking about, say, the scientific or medical control structures. In terms of science, what we've been talking about today, a scientific reductionist materialist, the sort of people who have been in charge for the last few hundred years, would just write this off as it's nonsense, it's hallucinations, whatever terminology they want to come up with to say that it's woo-woo, it's not real, and here's our explanation for it. That kind of scientific rationalism is definitely starting to be pushed back by in some cases, very experienced, articulate scientists. Like, you know, off the top of my head, I'm thinking Rupert Sheldrake, Bernardo Kastrup. I could come up with a load of other names, people who were as university educated and as experienced as these rationalist scientists, and yet they're saying something. Now, hold on a minute. Your reductionist materialist view of the world is incorrect.
Yeah,
and that is, you know, that I see as very, very progressive and important for the new world.
Yeah, it's that chink of hope, isn't it? And it's important to look for that. And you're right, we've been separated from the divine, is what has happened.
Sorry to interrupt you there, Joe. Yeah, that's brilliant, because I'm just another name that springs to mind is Graham Hancock, who I absolutely love, and materialist scientists hate, because he's coming up with a different opinion, and a different interpretation. And always something has stuck in my head when he spent a lot of time in the Amazon. You know, he's done many ayahuasca trips, which has informed his worldview. And exactly mirroring exactly what you were saying there about the divine, he was talking to a shaman in Peru, and basically just asked the shaman, you know, what is going wrong with the Western world? Why are we having so many problems? Mm-hmm. And the shaman's reply, I'll paraphrase slightly, but the shaman's reply was, it's simple. You disconnected from spirit.
Absolutely, 100%.
And it's perfect, isn't it? So simply, you know, four or five words, you have disconnected from spirit. Mm-hmm. That's your problem. That's why you have so many problems. And it's perfect and it's correct. And we need to reconnect with that spirit, because otherwise things could end badly. I get your positivism about the new world and, a new earth, a new heaven. But if we don't reconnect in large numbers to spirit, to the divine, whatever you want to call it, we're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. I would say that I think most people are led by their hearts. I'm going to say, I know that it doesn't seem that way. I would suggest that I think the majority of people are, in fact, heart-centered more than not. I think that what we see on the television and kind of Western mainstream culture might suggest otherwise, that I think that that's quite an illusion, to be honest with you. I think most people are really good people. I think that they know and feel when something is up. And as you say, I think a lot of people are starting to realize things are up. But I think also our young people, they are very interested in particularly things like astrology, which is great, because I remember even when I was growing up and I was into that kind of thing, you know, that was being ridiculed. And this is how we get separated from the divine. It is infantilized or ridiculed. We're told it's old hat. So, you know, religions and, you know, oh, that's old hat, we've moved on, you know, we don't need that anymore. And yeah, it's got us into look what it's got us into, basically. Yeah. But I think that lots of people are, through their connection with nature and the earth, they are suddenly reconnecting with the divine through nature. Or they are, you know, maybe the nature is the kind of gateway, and then they've started to, get onto some kind of spiritual journey. So I feel that that's happening en masse. I really do. And I think it's just the huge institutions and the kind of the huge infrastructure involving governments and everything else that has placed themselves in power. They're the ones that are kidding themselves, I feel. I feel that's all going to fall because it's old world. It's built on ego. It doesn't resonate with where we're going at all. It's not anything to do with where we're headed, and it's dying, and they know that, and they're literally throwing everything at this. But it cannot stop the love between people. You cannot stop the tide, as King Canute found himself. You know, thought he was so powerful that he could control the tide, and he can't. They can't. They might think that they are powerful, but they cannot.
Well, I truly hope you're correct, Joe. So through life, I've always taken a very gloomy, pessimistic attitude to almost everything. So I always, the first thing I see is the darkness and the gloom, and it's like everything's going to pot, and the goodness and the love is going to get overwhelmed. But you know, I'm not saying that's what I'm thinking now. You know, I'm kind of 50-50. Is, you know, who's going to win, love or hate? But I hope you're right. I, you know, obviously, I hope you're right, because we need to create a better world culturally, socially, and spiritually. And I'd say spiritually is the most important, because that's what we've lost. We've become disconnected from spirit. That's caused all of the problems. You know, I'm not saying we need to go back to fully ramped up organized religion. That's not necessarily, you know, we've done that. We need to move forward to some other kind of spirituality to give people's lives meaning and purpose, which for a lot of people at the moment, there doesn't seem to be any meaning and no purpose. And that's a massive problem. That you need to get rid of that and give meaning and purpose, and that will only come with spirituality. It's in the mind, not the brain.
Well, I'm wondering about, I'm kind of picturing you up at the tour, and I'm just wondering whether it's possible for you to access those words, because you heard them at some level that is kind of unconscious now.
Yes.
Wouldn't it be interesting if you can access that? Now, I mentioned before the silver method that I've been trying lately. It's something that a friend of mine, Martin Brofman, healed himself from a tumor in his spine, in his upper spine, many years ago. This was in the mid-70s, and he'd always talked about silver method, and he went on to create the body mirror system, which is what I used to do healings with. But I'd never taken the time to learn the silver method until the last couple of weeks. And I find it very powerful. And it doesn't have to be that, it could be some other kind of method, but there may be a way in which you could access those words that were spoken.
That would be incredibly interesting. Wouldn't it? Yes. Yeah. Like I say, thinking back on it now, the language, well, it might have been Welsh, could have been Irish, Scottish, or it could have been you know, Hungarian. I don't know, but being able to rehear the words and be able to reanalyze them and interpret them, that would be incredibly impressive thing to do. And I'd even thought of such a possibility until you mentioned it there.
That because there could be a message there. There could be a message there for you and for all of us. And I hope they make themselves known again. And I hope this message comes through. And I do believe that these beings from the other world, and I see them as divine. I see them all as divine. Even when they're painted as dark figures, and you know, these ideas of devil, you know, that's obviously not that's kind of a Christianized understanding of what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with the divine. And I do believe they're helping us at this time. And I do believe that's why they're making themselves known to so many of us. I mean, the experiences that are rolling in, it's happening everywhere to so many people. It's happening in their dreams as well. So that's obviously an interesting way in which to connect with the divine. If you're feeling like, you know, perhaps you don't have community to discuss with at the moment, though, of course, there's always things like pagan moots going on and Obod to join, or, you know, your local sort of druid groups. There will usually be something in your local community to join. And there are online communities too. But, you know, one way to connect is through your dreams. So that's something to attempt. And I hope that the beings that you became familiar with, which must have felt like a kind of community for you, where you are, I hope that they make a return too.
Yeah, so do I. Yeah, so do I. So I'm not quite sure why they've disappeared. It's very, very, very disappointing. But maybe it's just the way. I mean, it has gone on for eight years, 2016. Yeah, 8 years. So I shouldn't really complain. You know, some things maybe are just meant to naturally come to an end. But with all the other things going on this winter, that ceasing was just another kind of.
Yeah,
you know, couldn't you just come and help me out? But
yeah,
it is what it is.
Well, perhaps you could make some kind of offering, Neil.
I've tried, and okay. I only have a small yard here in my house, but it is an outside space, and I have lots of pot plants and lots of plants, you know, surrounding the whole yard, and I've been trying to bless certain plants with kind of low-level prayers to attract back something that has been lost. Those are the usual words I use. You know, can you bring back something that has been lost? And that only came to me over the weekend on Saturday. So I've only been doing that for a few days, and so what you're saying there, but that's one of my forms of offering. That's what I'm doing.
Oh, but well, I add my hopes for that too, and see, you know, something happening there. And I really hope that shifts for you. And what are you doing at the moment? Because you are one thing that tends to happen with people having encounters with Gwynapneath is some kind of creative project. So have you been hard at any creative projects recently?
When I've been able to put the procrastination to one side, which I am a champion procrastinator, it has to be said, is very good at procrastinating. but I have, I've just finished an article on the Cottingley fairies for our friend Simon Young, who's publishing the book in the summer. So I've been very focused on the Cottingley, and Kate and I talked about it on a podcast. It's a fascinating subject. It is much more interesting than those five photos that everyone knows about.
Yeah,
there's a lot going on behind the scenes. So I was concentrated on that, and I was very pleased with that article. It took a lot of effort to write it, because I hadn't really been into the subject matter before. And as soon as I found out how many sources there were, and it was like, oh my goodness, I've got to get on top of this. And so that was that took up my whole of sort of January into February, as well as putting a couple of blog posts together, which will be out in the next month or so. But one of the things that I've really been trying to do is, as you know, Joe, I've published two novels, and the second novel, Dead But Dreaming, actually did really well, and it was I'm actually quite proud. I don't want to use the word proud. Pride's a sin, isn't it? But I'm very pleased with that novel. The first one was very visceral, and a lot of people didn't like it. I think you included.
No, I read it. I enjoyed it.
The first one, it was really boom, a lot of bad things came out of me and went into that book. But the second book, I was very pleased. It was exactly what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So that's called Dead But Dreaming, which is slightly confusing because it's the same name as the blog site. But I enjoyed writing it. I felt a great creative energy coming out of me when I was writing that, and the response to it has been very heartening. Because when you put something like that out into the world, you know what it's like. You're thinking, oh my goodness, what if everyone hates it? What if I get 50 really bad reviews? How do I deal with that? But fortunately, that's not what happened. It got very good reviews, and that's that. But since then, that was published in 2020, and I've always been thinking, am I going to write a third novel? Is it ever going to happen? And until very recently, in some ways, this is because of the slight despair and depression that I've been feeling. There is a creativity in that sometimes.
Yeah.
It can, you go to the very bottom and then you find something. Mm-hmm. And so I've got a few ideas. I'm not sharing anything at the moment, just in case it never happens. Mm-hmm. But there are several ideas formulating exactly the way they did for the first two novels. I'm not a person who goes down and plans everything out from start to finish. Mm-hmm. Things come to me, and once enough things have come to me, boom, it'll be underway. And so they're coming to me at the moment, some amazing ideas, and I have no idea where they're coming from. All I can say is that maybe sometimes you need to be depressed and down in a sort of black place, and because there are creative things that you can pull out of those places. So again, so it's another very long-winded answer. What am I doing at the moment? Well, I'm writing some articles and maybe starting the third novel.
This is really exciting, and I didn't know about the third novel. That's brilliant. And I feel like it has something to do with this encounter. I just feel like this sense of reconnection to your creativity, which is always, as I say, the way out of this dark place. It's the chink of light that leads you out. But you're coming back out with something. I feel this is going to be a very important book, Neil. So I very much look forward to reading that.
Yeah, well, don't hold your breath. You know, I'm thinking about it, Joe. I'm not writing the final chapter. So you know, I hope it will happen. We will see.
Great. Yeah, keep me posted on that then. And the next, there's a bit of gallivanting going on in May as well. So we are returning to Woolerton, aren't we? But this time, just the small team of yourself, myself, Kate, Rob Wildwood, who was meant to join us the first time, and Glenn.
That's right.
Yeah. So we are heading there for another bit of a jolly in Woolerton, but this time we're kind of knuckling down and got some ideas of some specific things that we need to do. So that'll be fun to see you then. Not that long away now. No, just a couple of months away.
Two months, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I should say that I am going back to Glastonbury as well. So this conversation is going to be ringing my head when I go back there in April, again, just before Beltane, to meet up with a friend for a couple of days. So we'll see what happens this time. I'm looking at that as a kind of counterpoint to what happened in October that sort of sent me down on a bit of a bad spiral. Maybe that's, hopefully I can come around before then, but by the end of April, when I go back to Glastonbury, it will be kind of put that to bed, and here's the new world, the new year.
That is magnificent. I'm so glad that you decided yourself that you're going to go and do that, because it's the absolute perfect thing to do. That's great, and I look forward to hearing how that goes too. I might even come and meet you down there, actually, if you're down there.
You're more than welcome, Peter. More than welcome. I'll give you the dates, and we'll.
Well, good to see you as ever. And you're right, it's been a long winter. And really looking forward to seeing you again. And thanks so much for coming and chatting to me tonight. And yeah, speak to you soon. And I wish you lots of love and hope that things brighten up as soon as possible for you.
Thank you, Jo. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.